Hi, and welcome to Talk Word. I'm Marty Dundix, editor-in-chief of Weekly Humorous Magazine, and this is Talk Word, where hilariously funny writers and performers come and hang out and tell cringeworthy stories about their lives. And I'm lucky today to have one of the most awkward people that I've met recently, Jonathan Zeller. John Zeller, what do you prefer, Jonathan or John?
I guess you can go with Jonathan because that's the usual byline, but I don't care.
Yeah, your byline is Jonathan. That thing is classic.
It is. That's what I aim to project, an image of luxury.
I think a lot of writers do that.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like I'm like the infinity of humor writers.
But when you, and you're also a stand-up comedian, when you get introduced to do stand-up comedy, is it Jonathan Zeller?
It's usually Jonathan. I don't correct people if they say John. I think it's perfectly fine.
If someone says Johnny, do you go absolutely apeshit?
I don't. I try not to assail people who have booked me. It's not going that well for me yet. I do think that Johnny is a strange choice.
You could be a Johnny. No, actually, you couldn't.
My mom always told me I'd be the next Johnny Carson because, you know, she's a liar, but...
Aw.
That's fine. But yeah, no, it's fine. Call me whatever.
You could be the next Johnny Carson. You could be the next old, dead,
that's true.
Funny person.
Someday I will be. Funny is subjective. Someday we will all be dead.
There you go. That's a common theme, I think, in a lot of your writing, isn't it? It's sort of this existential, nihilistic view of the world.
Dread. There's a lot of dread. Yeah. Well, I don't know how you feel. You seem like... more optimistic than me. I don't know. I just like I think I'm happy but worried. I'm always worried because I know how it ends, and that does trouble me.
Well, it's always going to end, isn't
right?
It? So why not just have some fun?
See, that's the Marty Dundix attitude.
It is. it's kind of the happy fun, dumb goldfish attitude. Like, you know, it's the almost no memory of the terrible things that have happened to you or are to come, you know?
And you are a fan of goldfish humor. I've seen some goldfish humor.
There's actually, off the top of my head, I have like five different cartoons that I think I've published that are fish related.
That's right.
I used to have a pet fish.
You did? Uh-huh. How?
It wasn't like, a goldfish, though.
How recently?
In my adulthood.
In your adulthood? Yeah, I used to have fish when I was, up until I went to college, I had fish because my parents were smart enough to know that I was, you know, not ready for dog ownership, and they would be saddled with the dog, so I kind of had the sad substitute of a fish for a while.
It is a sad substitute, but also it has its impossibilities as well. Like, when you leave you got to take the fish with you. So I had the fish in my car, like driving down south to the family for a holiday, and I was like, well, I have this fish now. So I put the fish in the bowl in like a mini cooler. It was open air, and then I put the fish in the driver's seat of the car, and I put the seatbelt. It was almost like a car seat for a fish.
What?
Which was tough to do when you're driving, because you know when you'd stop short with a human, you put your arm in front of them, right? And I was doing that with a fish, and there was like water coming out of the bowl and stuff. And the fish almost came out a couple of times, so I had to put like a half lid, but then I thought the fish was going to die. And then you're thinking, well, fish they're able to breathe underwater. Is a lid really going to hurt that much? But yeah, it is going to hurt that much because the water doesn't always have recirculating air. Anyway, we've gone off topic.
Question and statement. One is, what type of fish did you have?
It was it's like blackish, bluish, violetish, it's not a goldfish. It's the other kind very quickly.
Well, it's not one of those, like, the fighting fish.
Yeah, it's the fighting fish.
So you got to keep him alone.
Alone. Yeah.
There you go. The other thing I was going to say is when you describe the trip, it's like, I think being an animal has to be so confusing in the world. Beta fish, you got it. But you know, in the world of humans, I always think about my dog, like her life. I think it's a happy life, but I think she's got to be confused all the time because she has no idea conceptually, you know, why she has to do 95% of things.
Yeah.
For the fish, like what's the experience of being in your car in the water? Like, why
just
is life
screaming.
Suddenly hell?
Similar experience as a human in my car, just screaming the whole time for dear life. I drive a 1994 Isuzu Rodeo.
That's getting up there.
Still has most of the tires. And yeah, it is. It's
like
an ancient car. 3 out of 4 ain't bad. Just had the gas tank just fell out. Had to find a new gas tank.
Is that real? That's something that can happen to a car?
Yeah. And my car is so old that when you call the repair place, they call you back. You say, oh, something's wrong with my car. And they're like, oh, it's the gas tank. We got to replace it. I'm like, okay. And then you wait for the call thinking, oh, my car's done. And the guy actually kind of gave me the call that said, you know, like, sorry, but there's nothing we can do. Car's not going to make it, you know.
Is that right?
And you're like, well, you know, what is it? Well, they don't make that gas tank anymore. And, well, is there anything I can do? Well, there is the secondary market. So you could look for a gas tank for a 1994 Isuzu. I'm like, well, that's a possibility. And I Google it. And there's actually, it's like getting an organ transplant. It's like looking on the transplant list for a matching donor, and I found there's a great database for junkyards across the United States, and they all share a database of car parts. And I was able to find exactly what I needed in Arizona, and they shipped it. And it's the gas tank is in better shape than my entire car.
It's good. So your car has not exploded yet.
No,
that's
but
good. That would my fear rather with just getting a gas tank for some random junkyard.
Well, the guy put it in. He's like, "This gas tank is great. It's in much better shape than the rest of your car. You should keep in contact with that junkyard to see if they have more parts." So I have them like bookmarked on my computer. So when the next thing falls off, I'm good to go.
You'll just slowly rebuild your Isuzu.
It's going to be like the $1 million man.
Right.
It's going to be able to talk soon.
That's all cars soon will. That's great. I'm sorry. I'll transition while we're on. Well, you told that it was a correct advertising, the most awkward person you've met. This is the truest. This is on brand.
Well, you're funny just because you were a little bit late, which was, I didn't think anything of that. But you were like, I've lived in New York for so long, and I got lost, and it's raining, and, you know.
I did get lost, and I have lived in the city for 16 years, which is kind of embarrassing, but it's just the way I am. And I think it would be more appealing. I feel like geniuses are allowed to do that, so I just need to get better at the other stuff I do. Because, like, Einstein would get lost, and no one cared, so I just need to get a lot better at a lot of other things, and then no one will care.
Yeah, people can give the excuse of, he's a genius, so... You know, you have to look past all of the awkward stuff that Don's constantly doing.
Yeah. But instead, we have this. I will get to my plug first so I can ask you interesting questions.
So you've got a really cool show coming up. Speaking of dogs and pets and things of that nature, you have a dog-friendly stand-up comedy show coming up at the end of May.
That's right, May 31st.
Okay.
If there are any dog owners out there in the New York area, should come down to DSK Cafe to the Good Dog Show. We got tickets at thegooddogshow.eventbrite.com. It's just $5 for humans and free for your dog guests. And we got a good lineup. Jordan Temple, who's been on BET, writes for Smilf and did really clever stuff. I don't know if you knew about like The Color Urkel or Hidden Fences, but those kind of mashup things.
Yeah.
We do them down at the Creek, other places. Emily Winter, who does some of the best shows. We were talking earlier about bar shows in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. If you've seen Back Fat at Union Hall, she produces that and some other things. Daniel Simonson, who's been on your...
Daniel Simonson's funny.
Yeah, he's been on Guaranteed Delivery.
His delivery is so just like deadpan serious.
Yeah, he's so charming.
Yeah.
I don't want to butcher his stuff, but I will say that in the privacy of my own home, my spousal equivalent and I think that's a spousal equivalent is a... Joy Behar phrase. But anyway, we sometimes do Daniel Simonson bits to one another. And then Carmen Legala.
Does he know that?
I don't think he does. Well, he might soon.
It might ruin all of his material for himself.
it's because he's funny.
He's just going to picture you naked.
That's It's the way you would do with anyone. People do Seinfeld bits to... Anyway.
That's true.
Carmen Legala, who's a really, really good joke writer, has been on Bridgetown, and then Danny Rathbun, and also Keenan Steiner.
Love Keenan.
Yeah, and he's co-producing with me.
That's Keenstar Millionaire.
That's right. On the Instagram, and of course, hosted by me, so you know it's going to be great. But I'm excited to crowd work dogs. I've wanted my dog to see me perform. This is finally a chance for that to happen.
And how many dogs are you expecting?
That is a...
Do you have contingencies for, like, what if the dogs don't get along?
No. I think that this is partially a hook. Part of me assumes, okay, it's not the biggest bar in the world. I feel like, let's say, dream scenario, like, okay, 40 people show. I mean, really, right? It's a bar show. It's a fairly small place. So what if maybe like 10 of them bring dogs? I kind of want to embrace the chaos. I know some comedians get really upset. You can see it. I've seen it on your show, other shows. You know, they almost get angry if they hear something go wrong.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna roll with it. I think it'll be funny if there is a little bit of a, you know, a dog heckling
it's
going on.
It's fun that you're, you know, it's fun to be able to roll with chaos a little bit. Like, you know, going in, there's going to be a bunch of dogs at the show.
Yeah.
So off the bat, things are different than what I am used to as, you know, a comedian and maybe as an audience member. You're going to be like, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
So you don't have any preconceived notions. It's going to be a dog comedy show.
Unfortunately, said the comedians are mostly seemingly excited about it.
Most are not running away.
Yeah, like, you know, Carmen Legala said she wanted to pet every dog. Danny Rathbun sent a very funny rider where all the conditions were as if he were a dog. So, you know, I think people kind of know what they're getting into. And there's a history of comedy for dogs. I don't know if you saw. Did you see the episode recently of the Chris Gethard show called Talk Show for? Oh, my God. Fantastic. The guests included, I'll come back to it, but they did a show that was ostensibly just for dogs, which obviously is ridiculous. They have no conception of that. And I think back.
Were they dressed up in little dog clothes?
They weren't, but the musical guest was Jeff Rosenstock. He was dressed in a big dog costume.
Oh, okay. Reverse.
And then, yeah, the whole studio audience was dogs, and they had a bunch of toys for them to play with. I know Steve Martin did a stand-up set for dogs back in the day. So there's a long tradition of having dogs in audiences, but I hope that this is the first Brooklyn bar show for dogs.
And they're just going to be on the ground. There's not, like, special seating for the dogs.
No, I'm assuming they'll mostly be in their owner's laps. I guess if you have a big dog, the dog will have to sit next to you.
Is there going to be a special dog happy hour?
Well, there will be a happy hour for humans from 3 to 8 p.m., so feel free to arrive at DSK Cafe early. You know, the dogs. That's right.
Great plug.
But, you know, this place, so it's like a separate room. You know how New York City rules are, essentially, to have something for dogs, you have to have everything separate from the kitchen. So it's really like a whole separate room from, but they have a great beer garden and, you know, a lot of great food next door, so you'll be able to bring it over. And, you know, it should be fun for the people. Now, how will the dogs react to the presence of stuff like sausage and pretzels? I guess stay tuned.
Yeah. because that stuff smells great, and they're going to be able to smell that very easily.
Even as a human, when you smell really good food, it's hard not to take it from the table.
Oh, they're
going to
go crazy. They're going to jump up on the stage to get across. Where in the orientation of where the food is and where the comics are, where are the dogs going to be? Like, are the dogs going to literally cross the comics to get to the food?
Well,
or is it another room?
The theory, the food is all prepared and served in a totally separate space.
Okay.
But people will be able to bring it in, I think. So they'll probably be with the people, so the dogs will be with them. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I've been to this dog cafe, but just for coffee, and usually there are only a couple of people in there. And there's another one in Manhattan, Boris and Horton, which is not, this is not part of the club, but I just really like that place.
Yeah.
It's good to have places to go with your dog. See, I don't know, the same struggle with your fish, right?
No, I did not.
You feel bad leaving them at home, you know, so it's nice to be able to take your dog somewhere.
I never took the fish to a bar, but maybe I should have.
You should. I'll tell you, I can't
Good way to pick up the ladies. Be like, who's that lunatic with the fish? It's my peacocking.
Are you allowed? What would happen? Can you bring a fish to a place like this? I better not say you can, because I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure no one would even notice. It depends how big. I mean, if you bring a gigantic aquarium into a bar, they might say something. But if it's just like a little bowl.
Right.
You know, like what you get the fish in at the fish store.
Right. It feels like an early Improv Everywhere bit to, like, bring a 20-gallon fish tank with you to wherever you're going. That feels like something they would have done, like, 15 years ago.
It would be very, I'm sure, yeah.
But I don't want to presume to know what Improv Everywhere would or wouldn't do. That's just my individual judgment.
Have you, before we talk about Improv Everywhere, have you participated in Improv Anywhere before?
No, I think I kind of missed the boat on it. By the time,
Are we too old to do that now?
Now, I think I'm too old for lots of things. I don't want to say too old. My favorite stuff, I think, was when people were confused about who they were. I remember the thing where they brought, you know, the desktop computers into the Starbucks.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain charm to still doing, you know. But I basically, you know, the no pants subway ride to me, the best thing was seeing people confused. And I think they're, to a degree, you're almost a victim of your own success. You see that happen. What it happens with Borat, it happens with all kinds of things. Once people know who you are, I think it's a little harder to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I haven't kept up with their exploits. I'm sure they found ways to conceal it.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, they do the Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
Usually every year. I didn't see that this year, though. If they do it all the time, then it's not.
I should have brought notes. This is terrible. I brought up a thing that I'm not qualified to discuss, which is awkward.
You don't have to have notes. But my question was, why? I guess the dog comedy show came just because you like to hang out with your dog in these cafes and thought I could combine the two things that I like to do.
Yeah, there's the pure of heart reason and there's the cynical reason. The pure of heart reason for it is that I do love my dog.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a dachshund. She's a miniature dachshund. She's 4 years old. She is
like a hot dog dog.
She is a hot... Now, that's redundant, but yes. She is... Marty just rolled his eyes at me.
Mini hot dog dog.
A mini hot dog. Just kind of like a cocktail.
Like a cocktail wiener.
Yeah, there you go. She's
is that what they would call a mini hot dog dog?
I mean, the AKC wouldn't, but you could. No one can stop you.
I would.
Yeah, but she's a very special dog. I love her very much, and it is hard to leave her. I think, you know, the parts of comedy that don't agree with me are all the parts except writing and telling jokes. So, like, kind of like being out late, really, I'm lame. I'm not that old, but I really would rather be at home with my female counterpart of my dog and just, like, be watching TV.
What's your dog's name?
She is Sheldon. That is a boy's name for a female dog. We picked the name first and just stuck with it. She doesn't know, so it's fine.
Do you call her Shelly?
Because
that's a girl's name.
So you sound a little bit like my mom right now. This is funny because there is a divide. Like, there are people who just
also wash your hands.
Yeah. No, my mom would do that. She just calls her Shelly. Some people on the street will do it. They're just like, no, I'm not going along with this. But we just go with Sheldon. Again, it's fine. I don't think, you know.
Bazinga?
Yeah.
Right?
We've all seen the Big Bang Theory, which I will not disparage. If anybody wants to hire me to write for CBS network sitcom The Big Bang Theory, I would be honored.
So you're also a comedy writer. You do stand-up, but you're also a writer. And you write for a lot of places. You write... Have you been in The New Yorker?
I did, I wrote
a
daily
show. Big shot, Mr. Big Shot over here. Look at this guy.
It was a very nice morning over brunch. I felt very special. I got a lot of congratulatory emails, and then just the next day I went back to not being able to figure out how to get pitches accepted by anyone. So
what was the article that you did? Oh, you did the talk show thing. That was McSweeney's. That was very funny.
I am proud of it. I will say, the New Yorker was the craziest.
Tell the headline for that McSweeney's piece.
It's time for straight white men to stop dominating the late night TV landscape as soon as I'm done hosting The Tonight Show for 30 years.
That was pretty good. Thanks. And it was a very funny article. So if you're listening, please check that out on
McSweeney's. Thank you. Yeah, please read all of Jonathan Zeller's humor pieces and send him money. It doesn't have to be for any reason. I'm proud of that one. I feel like it aged okay. Sometimes when you have like a quote-unquote timely idea, like the kind of McSweeney stuff for you guys at weeklyhumorist.com, whatever, New Yorker, anything.
Plug.
That's right. It's sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I look back. I'm very rarely ashamed, but sometimes, you know, a month or two later, I'm like, maybe I missed it a little. But I think that...
What stuff doesn't age well?
Oh, now I got to think about it because I try to leave it in the past.
I don't want to bring up any bad memories for you.
Maybe I'll think of one later. But I think that one, I'm like, that was like a good take. That also came from a true place because you don't know when you're the kind of person who historically has succeeded in this field and you see necessary societal changes happening. You know, if you're a right-thinking person, you have to be happy about them. But then it's also sort of like, still I can get in, right? Like I can have...
Certainly you'll let me in.
Yeah, that was sort of the awkward.
I know that I'm privileged, but I'm still not succeeding, right? So I'm not really privileged?
Right, and then you still are. I don't want anyone to take this out of context. I know that I'm very lucky in a privileged station in society, but just strictly speaking, I don't host The Tonight Show.
No,
you can't
don't.
Take that from me.
No.
I don't. But, you know, soon, someday.
You're plotting.
I'm plotting. Watch out, Fallon.
Watch out.
just going to hang out near the studio in a jacket and tie all the time in case, you know, he's not available. To be like, grab the first guy who's just dressed for the job.
And as a comedy writer that works in the biz, do you submit like TV packets? Are you part of that kind of comedy writing world?
I have. Another thing I need is an agent.
Yeah.
So if any agents would like, I've submitted, you know, every year to Clickhole, you know, whenever they do the call for submissions,
yeah.
Which has not worked yet. And then one time Colbert did sort of like an open thing. Like they literally posted the job.
There's people who there's people that write for me that do Clickhole.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like it's interesting because, you know, certain people may not get into certain things and other people may not get into other things. But there is a commonality of like you're all on my site.
Oh yeah, we're all. I agree. Yeah. But I think part of it is that you have like you accept a lot of different kinds of stuff.
I was talking to Kit like a couple of days ago about that, and maybe I was talking to Annie Newton about that too, because I was talking to him yesterday, and he's another writer that also does McSweeney's, also does Weekly Humorist, and he's, you know, one of these kind of, you know, comedy magazine guys. You guys kind of run in the circles. A lot of the stuff on McSweeney's or the stuff that they put in the New Yorker, it sort of sounds like the same vein.
Yeah.
You know, like it could have been written by the same headspace, person, voice that they're looking for. And I kind of just throw a lot of different stuff in there for a lot of different people. You know, like some of the cartoons are out there. Some of the cartoons are, you know, way to this area, way to that area. Some of the writing is just bonkers.
Yeah.
And then some of the writing's really, really refined.
Yeah, if you did, yeah, it would be interesting to see a matrix where I do think McSweeney's and The New Yorker are closer than, yeah, you go all over the place. Some of your stuff would be Mad Magazine. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you come from the National Lampoon tradition, you know, directly.
Just dirty.
Very dirty. I think, you know, somebody else, it's still a little bit more focused. I think, you know, American Bystander takes a lot of different kinds of things. But
Bystander. Do you submit to Bystander?
Yeah, I've had Well, I had one like piece in there, one joke, and I should have a couple in the next couple of issues, but it sort of comes out on a semi-irregular schedule. But it's really great. Everybody should send them money. I hope that they succeed. I like print, and
I like print, and it's a beautiful publication. If you guys are listening, please check out the American Bystander on Facebook and Instagram and all those places. They have a if you go on Amazon, you can also buy hard copies of it. You can buy back issues on Amazon. I've seen they're heavy paper.
Yeah,
they're,
it's really,
you know,
thick.
It's beautiful artwork. It's really nice cover artwork, and I've loaned out, like, I had three copies here, and they're all on loan, and I don't think I'm ever getting them back because they're so nice.
They're really nice. It's like, it has like a nice smell.
Yeah, it's old school. It's like a beautiful print magazine,
and it's got a crossword puzzle. You know, Michael Gerber is a really good editor. He's he's a pleasure to work with, and I think he really tries to do the right thing, as you do. You know, I appreciate anybody who. You guys both, you pay your writers, I think, what you can. And I think, it adds some dignity to the process of comedy writing, even though, you know, look, there's a real oversupply of people who want to write comedy. And that's why you see, you know, we were talking before, actually, you deserve congratulations. You were in the Writer magazine as one of the gatekeepers. Gatekeeper of
the Writer magazine.
So check that out. I think that's at Barnes & Noble as well. Marty Dundick's Gatekeeper.
Of American comedy.
American humor. Is it contemporary American? I haven't read it. I just know you're in it, and Brian Boone, and is it Chris Monks is in there?
Christopher
from McSweeney's.
Monks, Emma Allen,
New Yorker,
the Belladonna editors are all in there.
They have taken off, man. That is incredible.
They're great.
Yeah, they do.
They're
really
so
good
smart.
Work. Yeah, they're really smart. The new feminist erotica, which, you know, deservedly is a book now, you just hear that idea and you're just like, there's a certain, like, there's an elegant simplicity to, like, you sort of hear an idea and you're like, oh, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
You know, just instantly. Like, once everything just extends from the name. And they executed it really well.
And Robot Butt is in there as well.
Yeah, which I'm happy for them. They're working hard. And are they in Cleveland, Robot Butt? Is that
I think they're in Cleveland.
Yeah. I did one thing for Robot Butt. Was the Hard Times not in there? I didn't read because they
Hard Times is not in there.
Yeah. They got an interesting thing going on.
They do
fake news because you sometimes do. You sometimes do satirical news because you'll have all the stuff. But they
really rarely. It's almost only because of you.
Well, there's I guess it's a different kind of thing because it's not quite satirical news, but you got that Weekly World News kind of thing going on.
Oh, yeah, Jeffrey Gurian submits.
Yeah.
And it's like, the same thing with him. Like, I'll only, I almost never do fake news, and if I do, it's only you and Jeffrey Gurian. Because well, I don't want to be like a fake news site, you know?
Yeah.
But your stuff and his stuff are not trying to be The Onion. It's totally right. different. It's totally a different idea. So when people submit Onion-esque type things, I don't even, I'm like, no, no, no. But with your stuff, it's different because it's a different take on a fake news item. It's not just like straight fake news.
Right. Well, I mean, the funny thing is like there's stuff like, well, Department of Nihilism, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you could see them doing that, but it exists sort of a little bit in like a different universe. I think most of their stuff is probably more related to the actual world, but they do veer off into those weird places.
Yeah.
Time. Oh, I love The Onion. I love comedy so much. Hey, Marty, how did you end up in this career? What mistakes did you make?
I went to Syracuse. And I worked in illustration, or I majored in illustration. This is all in the Writer magazine, the article written by Keisha Whitaker,
who's also
wonderful.
A humor writer.
Yeah, she writes for all the places.
Yeah, all the same places.
The next Guaranteed Delivery show is going to be on June 4th, and we're going to make it like a little celebration of that magazine coming out. So Keisha is going to come, and we're trying to get, we got the Belladonna crew is all going to be there. A lot of their writers are going to come. I'm trying to get all of my writers. We're trying to get some of the, and also McSweeney's people. So you, there's so much overlap. Yeah. They're all going to be coming.
James Folt is around the city. I know he's.
I will invite everybody.
Right. We're just going to invite people on the podcast. You just want to list people now. You pull.
Well,
up Facebook.
I mean, the events. It's not a private event, so there's going to be an event page on the Facebook and the Eventbrite and stuff. So you're going to be able to. And if you're getting all the weekly humorist emails, which I'm sure if you're listening, you do.
Friday Funnies.
The Friday
Subscribe.
Funnies. It's there's going to be a link to go to the show,
great
too.
Great cartoons from the likes of Bob Exney.
Oh, I love Bob Exney.
That's right.
Isn't he great?
Great writing. Yeah, he's very clever.
He's so funny.
Good artist.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah. I listened to his episode of this podcast as well.
He's funny. Yeah. And he's incredibly good at tennis.
Is that right? Have you played tennis with him?
No, but I know that he went to Pratt and he played tennis at Pratt. I think it was like a tennis scholarship.
They have athletic scholarships.
That's what I said.
What year was this? That's incredible.
I don't know. And I know that he still does things involving tennis, which I think is fun. But yeah, the Guaranteed Delivery Show is going to have a lot of the people from the magazine article that's coming out. So you have to come. I think we're going to do like a little pre-party about with all the people who were involved. So that's going to be fun. And yeah, so yeah, I went to Syracuse. I studied art. I was an illustrator. I did humor illustration. I studied classical painting before college. I was really into portraiture. And then when I came to New York, I worked for the New York Press, which is an old...
I love the New York Press.
It was an alt weekly, and it's
Matt Taibbi used to write for them.
I used to illustrate for him.
Oh, neat. I got to see some of those.
Yeah, I have them all online.
And there were those really weird Armand White movie reviews, which by most...
I illustrated those.
Oh, that's great. I got to look back. I bet I was looking at your illustrations and just didn't even know. How long did this go?
Maybe 5 years.
Huh.
A lot of the 2000s, basically. And it was great. Yeah. And then they went out of business. And it was only, you know, you made nothing per picture. But it was fun. And I did, I was like painterly. So it was very portraiture type stuff that I'd still do for Weekly Humorous.
Marty just gestured over to a what do you call it? Is that just a table?
It's an art table. So it's,
art
like a,
table.
It's like a slanted drafting table. And it's covered. My office is an absolute disaster and mess. But it's a creative space, wouldn't you say?
This is pretty neat by my standards. I think it's funny, side note, one of the areas where there is the most variation in otherwise mainstream people in how they live their lives, I think is like filth or like messiness. Like I've had people come over to my apartment and I've been like, oh, I'm sorry, it's such a mess. And I'm telling you, like it is.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, this is actually fairly tidy. And I'm just like, how do you live? And then you go to people's place and some of them are, you know, not in, because nobody can make you. For the most part, you live in your own space and you sort of decide that no one's coming in inspecting your apartment or if you work as you
I'm
do
still
in your
not
own
sure
office.
In this conversation where I am on the spectrum of this conversation that
I think
you're talking about.
You're doing better than me.
Am I disgusting?
No.
Are you calling me disgusting or not disgusting? Oh, I can't tell yet.
You may be disgusting. It's not for me to say, but I will say you're less disgusting than me.
This is messy, right? I'm a little cluttered. I have a couple of things I'm actually moving out of here. I have boxed up some things that are just like junk I don't need, so I'm moving, but I haven't moved them out yet, so I have to tuck them away. So then I've actually created more mess by trying to clean. So this is what happens. When you try to clean, you end up screwing it all up. I shot myself in the foot, and now this place is a dump again because I have two interns starting. in 2 weeks. Awesome. And I got to figure out a place to put them. So I got to get rid of half the stuff in my office just so I could actually have interns. So anyway, I was at college. I came to New York. I started illustrating New York Press. That was great. I randomly got a job at the David Letterman show.
Great show.
Because
So at that point, that must have been the late show, right? As opposed to
it was the late show. Yeah, late night. And so this is like 2002.
Right.
And then I actually found out how to. I had a friend who I went to high school with who actually worked at Letterman. I didn't realize that she worked at Letterman. So at the time, I was outside of the late show waiting across the street from Mad Magazine because I had dropped off my portfolio.
Oh, wow. Mad Magazine used to be. I can see that building. And then everybody moved out to. They moved out west. But
they moved to California. But that was only like 6 months ago.
Yeah, but that's like 52nd Street, that big old office building.
That was
they had
DC
a whole
Comics.
DC. Yeah.
So I used to go, I went in there to drop off my portfolio, and I met with the Mad Magazine guys, but when I was at...
By the way, they're also doing a great job over there. Did you see the first new Mad?
They're doing great.
Yeah, they're doing great. Dan Telfer, is that how you pronounce his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's Ali Gertz is over there.
Yeah, they're doing, obviously I'm looking at what they're doing on Instagram, and they're doing hilarious stuff. Yep. The art's great, the writing's great. They're really reinvigorating Mad Magazine very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, pow, just all of a sudden, I feel like I'm seeing it everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of buzz. There's
lot of buzz. I mean, we're sitting here talking about it.
That's right. If we're talking about it, you know, we've got a handle on the zeitgeist. Well, there was, I think what they did with the fake rebrand was really clever. It was like, it was pretty dry. Did you see that where they pretended they were going to make Alfred E. Newman like really shiny? And
right.
You almost could believe it because people are constantly doing stuff. Like they're just taking perfectly good brands and just putting their stamp on it as a show of force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry for... let me just interrupt your answers to questions I've asked.
I'm boring.
To compliment people.
People
so you
definitely... people do not listen to this podcast to learn about me. That's what I know.
My theory
people
is...
People are here to learn about whoever I'm talking to, but not about me.
Here's my theory about podcasts, and this seems strange to anybody. Apologies to anyone who's listening to this. I don't think anyone has ever listened to any podcast. Hey, maybe they played the
people
first
do.
Few seconds.
No one I know listens to my podcast. Strangers listen to this podcast because I can get numbers. I can see.
I know people are listening. I just like
but no one I know. I don't even ask people I know to listen.
Yeah, you got to get past. I think that's sort of a good habit. I try to get out of the, you know, at a certain point, I'm like, well, this is really for strangers.
Yeah,
you know,
my friends don't like me.
Yeah.
Enough. Not enough to listen to this. No.
Right. And you start to feel. You know, about inviting friends to stuff, you will have to move past that. I mean, because they feel so bad also. They get really awkward. Like, you could ask your friend, oh, are you free to go to the movies on Friday? And then they'll just say, oh, no, sorry, I got something else going on. But if it's your show, it gets really weird.
Yeah.
They'll just kind of trail off and not talk to you for 2 months to avoid saying that they don't want to.
Well, luckily, you haven't invited me to almost any of your shows.
Thank you. You're always free to come. It's public information, but you know, you certainly don't have to.
I might. When is this dog comedy show again?
That's May 31st at DSK Cafe in Fort Greene, Brooklyn.
What day of the week is that?
That is a Thursday night. It's a great going out night. You don't have to worry whatever big date you have on Friday, whatever weekend stuff you have. It's Thursday. You're getting ready. Look, you're not going to pay that much attention at work on Friday.
And this is in Brooklyn?
Yeah, it is. Fort Greene is a...
Oh, Fort Greene. That's right by me. I'm in Park Slope.
Oh, yeah. I love Park Slope. I lived for many years near Park Slope. Now I'm sort of a Fort Greene / Clinton Hill person.
So you're still near Park Slope?
Yeah, I'm still near Park Slope. Just a few stops on the G train.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Brooklyn. It's great. Nice parks. See, that's what I want in a neighborhood. Just getting back to the theme of sort of an old man in a way. But I really like living near a park. It smells nice. You can walk your dog. What do you like about Park Slope?
It's a nice spot. Oh. What else did I want to ask you?
Oh, so anyway, yeah. So how'd you end up then? It's fine. After
Nobody
Letterman,
wants.
I'll get the report after that. I'm sorry.
Everything about me
I'll
is
catch
boring.
Up with you later.
No. I worked at Letterman, then I worked at National Lampoon because they had an office around the corner and I worked there for like 13 years. And then,
you did good work.
Yeah.
And then they
got sold and then I started this Kit Lively is fantastic, and he writes for Mad and SpongeBob SquarePants comics, and Bob Eckstein, and all these guys who were writers and cartoonists have been gigantically supportive of Weekly Humorist and writers like you. And you know, it's interesting.
I was a big coup for Weekly Humorist. I think that's
well, it's just like the And it's just about having a platform for writers like yourself to publish on. So that's what the need I saw was there really wasn't there's not that many places to go, as we just established. Right. There's only a couple of – there's a handful of places to publish, like not mainstream, but like typical comedy. Not right. Typical, you know what I mean? Like we're not on the fringes that much. And, you know, like deep, deep Reddit threads. Like we're not right. That. We're a little bit more on the front line. So I – launched this and it was only because there were tons of people that wanted to submit.
And what's a big, I wanted to ask, because it's a different world, right? Going from National Lampoon, which had its, you know, one way of doing things. What are the big challenges now? I feel like the world's always changing. I read like there was a Sarah Aswell piece in Splitsider. Sarah Aswell is one of your contributors, right?
Yeah, she's great.
She's very funny. She did the kind of, was it the Meat Lover's Guide to the Pregnancy by Month?
Yeah,
I don't want to butcher
it. It was Month by Month, Meat Lover's Edition, which is great. And if you're on the site, that got produced audio-wise from voice actors.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's really funny. The guys... Jeff Kreisler and his crew, there's a comedy troupe that does something called the Final Edition, and they're just almost like old school radio performance and comedy, like improv stuff. They're very funny, and they did that.
And
Splitsider wrote an article. Which one are you going to ask about? The one with Matt Kleiman?
Exactly, yeah, about Funny or Die and just sort of the challenge of working with, you know,
Matt Kleiman's great. God, have you met him?
I haven't. I would love to.
He was in here randomly. We're actually in a WeWork building presently downtown on Wall Street, and one of my friends that he's like a lunch buddy. Like he works for another small company upstairs on the fourth floor, and I have lunch with him every day with his coworker Will. And one of his high school friends in San Diego is Matt Kleiman.
Whoa!
And he was like, "Hey, my friend works in comedy. You should meet him. He's coming in for a happy hour. Have a beer." I'm like, "Oh yeah, sure." And it was Matt. And I was like, "Hey, what do you do?" And he's like, "Show me all this." I'm like, "Oh, you're showing me all the Funny or Die videos." I'm like, "Oh, this is you're like a professional comedy person,
right?"
And he was telling me all about Pitch. Do you use Pitch?
I haven't. I have sort of a hesitation. Have you used it?
So fun. There's a weekly humorous team. You got to be on Pitch.
I'll try. I'll try to get settled. You know what it is? Here's the thing, and this ties into the question I was going to ask you, but now it's gotten all disjointed.
Yeah.
But part of me is suspicious of. So it's a good idea.
It's a great
part of me
idea.
Is like you start working with a writer, and there's a certain like value to what they're doing, and crowdsourcing in some way.
I see that.
I got to wrap
That's
my
the first
head
thing I
it.
Said. Also.
Right. Where,
and I still
I mean?
Agree with you.
Yeah. It creeps me out in a way to be like, okay, well, we have 1,000 people on this idea, and we're just going to take like the two that we like, because then a lot of people work for free. And I know I can't have – it's tough because on one hand, there is the opportunity, right? There's always that balance. It's sort of like what happened with the Saturday Night Live, like the Weekend Update kind of email joke, the freelancer thing, and then that goes away. And you see like, well, from the union perspective, that's good. Like you don't want people like faxing in jokes for $100 a pop, but – if you raise the bar too much, I understand you lose opportunity. So Pitch is great in the sense that it's opportunity for people, but I have a dream that all comedy writers will be eating based on, you know, the comedy they write. So it's, I don't know, it's a tough balance.
I like it because it's like a closed network for the funny people on Twitter.
Right.
And it lets the people on the Pitch app potentially, I mean, in one side, stuff that's just like general fun things that you can play games against other really funny people, and it's not open to the rest of the world necessarily, which is nice. And then they also can do things where they can get paid for jokes if it's more of like a sponsored thing, or they're actually sourcing comedy for copywriting. So it's a fun way to do it, you know, give and take. Like if you want to do it, it's not a lot of time. You don't have to do it. If you do it a ton, great. You can do it a ton. I felt like it was just the flexibility of it seemed really cool for comedy writers or creative people that wanted to just kind of dip their toe in, you know?
I should check it out because I think
you should
you're right.
Check it out.
The way you're framing it, if it's not a replacement for anything else, then I think I'm a lot happier with it. It did seem like a cool idea, but yeah, my one hesitation was the crowdsourcing element, but I guess that's the reality. It's 2018. You can't make it not 2018.
Right, and it's fun. And I wouldn't use it for a ton of things, but from a publishing standpoint, you know, it would be, it's fun to make a topic and maybe get, you know, 40 submissions or 40 or 50 people throw a bunch of jokes against the wall, and you take the top 15 and you make it into a list article, and then you know, give everyone credit, and it's a fun little game, basically.
Right,
but,
you've seen stuff,
but you can't
come
really.
Out of that.
But I'm more interested in non-list articles anyway, so you know, the stuff that I like is the kind of stuff that that you write or the kit writes, or, you know, the more long narrative type storytelling. Like, I like articles that can be performed or listened to, or, you know, maybe repurposed another way that's entertainment. You know,
I'm not above a listicle. I've done, like, the first thing I ever did for you was a listicle about urinal conversation topics, which was just like,
Yeah, that's still funny.
Oh, of course. I mean, listen, everybody, well, all males can, you know, obviously relate to the travails of urinal interactions. But
absolutely.
But I was going to ask about the Splitsider article, though, just in general, because I think anybody who makes stuff online, is it a challenge now to deal with the fact that, you know, maybe Mark Zuckerberg sneezes or a couple of things change, and then all of a sudden, you know, traffic you were counting on
absolutely
might not be there?
No. And that article is absolutely correct in that they tweak a couple of things in an algorithm, and traffic and likes and whatevers and shares that I was getting, like, no problem, just stopped one day.
Hold on one second. I mean, is this still? I think I knocked out one ear. Hold on, let me see.
You plug your headphone back in?
Yeah, we did it. You may have lost a second of...
No, you didn't. You're fine.
I am a disaster.
You're funny.
I just knocked the plug out.
The number of times that John has somehow broken his headphones just in the 40 minutes we've been talking, it's happened like 9 times. Before we started recording, you somehow, like, your headphones weren't even plugged in, but you were wearing them. The cord was on the ground.
That's really bad. If I get out of here without causing hundreds of dollars of damage to your equipment, I'm going to consider this a success. But I guess, what are you doing? I guess you got the newsletter, right? That's got to be a more stable source of, like, no one can really touch your newsletter.
The Facebook stuff was kind of, you know, it did suck. All of a sudden, you went from having likes and shares and traffic coming in from Facebook, then all of a sudden, just people just didn't see your stuff anymore.
Right.
You know, it wasn't even in their feed.
Right.
And you can sponsor a post, but even that really wasn't working either, because they weren't showing it to people. They were trying to overcompensate for what they had been doing. So all of a sudden, if you were a brand page, none of your stuff was being shown anywhere. So I almost, I'm still putting stuff on the Facebook. I don't care about it. I'm much more focused on Instagram, Twitter, and getting people to read the email blast or sign up for the email blast or that kind of interaction. So, I mean, Facebook is fine, but it's good for live comedy shows. So I definitely think Facebook is a great way to get the word out for an event. So I definitely rely on Facebook for the guaranteed delivery shows. Lots of people share and like and come to them for that reason. So that in that way, it's really useful still. But it's not really useful for sharing content as much as it used to be. At all.
And do you think, like, that was a good answer.
Thank you.
Do you think that, so you're online, there's, you know, American Bystander, Mad, you know, they will partially count the New Yorker, but obviously they got primarily other stuff going on. But do you see a way, do you see a future? I guess it's funny, the Funny Times still does print, and they're like a little newsprint operation, but do you see a way in the future? How do you feel about print and for yourself and in general? Do you think it's gonna survive? Is there gonna be a vinyl revival kind of thing going on?
I mean, I like print. I still get things in print. I still get a newspaper delivered, and I still read newspapers. I still pick up an AM New York and a Metro every day, and I like having a newspaper. So I enjoy reading things on screens. I like reading hard copy books. I like having paper. So I think print's not really going to go anywhere. I think that it is expensive to do things in print, though. So as long as people can somehow afford it, I don't think Weekly Humorous is going to be in print. If somehow we had a publishing sponsor that would want to, that was already an imprint that wanted to do that, that would be one thing. But on our own, no. But you can digitally print things rather easily. We have an app. I don't know if you have the app, but you can get the Weekly Humorous app on iTunes or Android. So there's like a weekly issue that you can get that's kind of some stuff that maybe isn't on the site yet. It's maybe early stuff that we add to the site later. But there's always a couple of cartoons and a couple of articles. And there's usually a cover. So there's a custom cover for it. So there's something that's on the – it's optimized for iPad or Kindle or something like that. But you can look at it on your phone, but it's small.
Check it out. Yeah,
are you a print person? You seem like a print person to
me. Yeah, I do prefer print. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff, such as Weekly Humorous or Daily Shouts or McSweeney's stuff that primarily exists online.
You know,
I'll read it. But I don't know, it is nice. It's just nice to sit down with something and not have, you know, text messages coming in, and you don't feel as frantic, and you can just be alone with your piece of paper.
It's also tough to read things on devices, I find, because so many things pop up. Like, mm-hmm. notifications are getting out of control. Like, I get so many. If anything happens, if, you know, Jared Kushner takes a shit, I feel like CNN reports it, and it dings on my phone, and I'm like, ugh, and I'll be doing something else, and you have to swipe it away, yeah, swipe it away. You're just like, ugh, too much. I can't read anymore on this phone. So you read a paper or you read a book, and you get to leave. Like, I feel like it's almost like an out. Like, I get to take a time out if I'm reading something hard copy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a timeout. I probably shouldn't go. This isn't very funny. There was one morning. Actually, it was the morning of one of your guaranteed delivery shows, and I didn't go online, and I didn't turn on the TV. I just told myself, you know what? Today, I'm just not dealing with any of this stuff. So I went into work, and as I'm getting off the subway, my girlfriend calls, and she never calls. I mean, ever.
Oh,
and
why would
as
she?
I'm getting and I'm like, oh, what's going on? She's like, are you okay? I said, oh, wait, what do you mean? She's like, oh, there was an attack in was it the day there was like something in Grand Central? Anyway, long story short, I know it's grim, and it was, you know, they got the guy or whatever it was, but I guess I have to check the news. That was December. The morning. Yeah. I didn't know what was going on in the
news.
Yeah,
that was
I just
scary.
Went in, like nothing was happening. Yeah, it's a scary world. I guess I'll rapidly change the subject.
Well, you have to tell me a cringeworthy story. You have to tell me an awkward story. Other than just your daily stuff.
I'll tell you one. Yeah, it's mostly just I was born, and then it's been like this for more than 34 years. So as you, there's one thing. We used to like to go to the aforementioned lady friend. We used to like to go to visit her grandma in mm-hmm. Bay Ridge at one of those buildings. I think they call it like a NORC, like a naturally occurring retirement community. You know, it's a building where all the people are old.
Naturally occurring.
Yeah, but it's not like a nursing home. And there'd mm-hmm. always, outside there, there'd be a lot of old people hanging out in their wheelchairs, some of them inexplicably smoking, using whatever health they had left. And I was walking in one day, and this old lady said, excuse me, I dropped my bag. Can you help me? And I said, mm-hmm. okay. So I leaned down to pick it up. And as I'm handing it to her, I feel warmth. And I realize as I'm handing it to her, that's a bag of piss.
Oh,
it's like, attached like medically. And
it's attached to her.
It must by some sort of a tube.
That's not a colostomy?
Well, it couldn't have been a colostomy bag because that's a...
What's a pee bag called?
I don't know what a pee bag is called, but I guess I felt like...
Catheter bag? Is it a catheter bag?
It must be a catheter bag.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And I guess I felt like she buried the lead. And the thing is at that point, I just handed it to her.
Can you hand me my bag of urine?
Yeah. You could have said of urine. And then I spent a long time washing my hands when we got upstairs because I'm a little bit of a
was this old? Was this the grandma?
No, it wasn't the grandma. It was just some random.
It was just
old
a random grandma.
There.
It was someone's grandma.
It was somebody,
probably
somebody's grandma. Yeah. But not the grandma in question, who I am pleased to report never asked me to pick up a bag of her pee. She was a sweet lady. So I guess is that awkward? I mean,
yeah.
My whole life is
counts.
It's pretty awkward.
Points.
There's
yeah.
You guys can't see
Double.
Marty's face during this discussion, but there's a lot of like, oh no, what have I done? I don't know. There's a lot of the being in comedy. I think there's a part where you kind of have to try to network with people. I'm not good at that part.
Was your first stand-up show really awkward, or what, did it go well?
Well, I did stand up in fits and starts. I only a couple or a few years ago started again doing it in earnest. I did sketch comedy for mm-hmm. a while, but one of the early times that I did it, like when it didn't take, I got so nervous. It was at the Creek, and I had to sit down on the stage. Like, my legs got so shaky. So I guess that
so
was kind of awkward.
So you're up at the Creek in the Cave, and you're doing comedy, and you're on stage, and you are so nervous that you just sit down?
Yeah, I just sat down for the rest of the set.
Because like, your legs were going to give out?
Yeah, it felt like they were going to give out, so I guess that's awkward. But yeah, I haven't
How long was that set? If you were sitting
It wasn't that long. It couldn't have been more than 5 minutes. I mean, it was like an open mic. It was one of the first times I ever performed in front of people. I'm not a natural performer, as you can tell.
Can
You've
you
seen me
remember
perform.
Any of the jokes you told at that particular open mic?
Let me think of
one. Can you tell me one of the jokes where you were so nervous that you had to sit down on the stage in front of a crowd of strangers?
Oh, listen, those jokes were all so bad. The truth is, I just...
That's what I
want to
hear. Can you tell me one?
I really... Oh, boy. You know what? It's just for my reputation. I can't do that.
I like
it. The jokes that I still think are good are bad enough.
Yeah.
Like, if I recognize that the joke is bad, I can tell, you know, a joke.
I like this. Are you going to perform some of these jokes when you're hosting at at the dog show?
They're going to be... I'll tell you what I'm nervous for, and that what might be awkward is at this show, as you know, or as you may know, I have a lot of jokes about dogs and sort of like about harm coming to my dog because it's a thing.
It's good to have a niche.
Well, because, you know, you talked about, I'm very scared of a lot of things. It's really something that upsets me. I wouldn't make light of anything bad happening to Sheldon, but I do sort of worry if they're actual dog owners with their dogs in the audience, they might take those badly. I've never thought about, like Keenan was saying, oh, don't get politically correct about jokes about dogs, but I almost feel like, can they take dog jokes out in that crowd? I guess I'll find out.
Keenan gave you direction on what kind of jokes you should tell?
No, he just said, when I said, oh, I don't know about some of my dog material in front of this crowd, he's like, yeah, you can't worry about that.
That's funny. Okay, your show. The Good Dog Show is going to be May 31st on Thursday at 8 p.m. You can bring your dog. We're not sure about fishes, so you have to email John directly about that.
That's what I said. I will field any questions. You can all... Just don't call the bar and ask if you can bring a fish. We do want them to like us.
The show is $5 for humans, free for dogs. This is at the DSK Cafe, a Bark Easy, at 99 Hanson Place, Brooklyn.
Right.
Oh, a Bark Easy, like a speakeasy.
It's like a speakeasy, but you know what dogs do?
They bark.
They bark. That's right.
Oh, that's so Brooklyn.
Also, the name, it is the most Brooklyn thing ever, but like the current incarnation of Brooklyn. Also, the Good Dog Show, I don't know if you know it, that's a play on words, because it could be a show for good dogs, or it could be a good show where you could bring your dog. What does it mean? You decide.
All of the answers to these questions will be revealed on May 31st at 8 p.m. on Thursday at the Bark Easy. And who's on the bill?
Oh, we got Jordan Temple, as I mentioned. I went through all their credits before. These people are all funny. There's Jordan Temple, Emily Winter, Daniel Simonson, Carmen Legala, Danny Rathbun, Keenan Snyder, and me, Jonathan Zeller. This felt like a wrap-up. I do want to okay, so that's great. 99 Hanson Place, May 31st. Get your tickets.
Yeah.
The Good Dog Show. Yeah. Eventbrite.com. Get tickets.
I'll put a link to it when I post this on the site.
Thank you. But I do want to plug your show also. I just want to say just one thing about the mailroom, because you mentioned guaranteed delivery.
I'm going to mention it again, but yeah, go ahead.
But really, out of all the bar shows in New York, some of these places we do, obviously not DSK Cafe, which is a beautiful place, best place in the world, but a lot of the bar shows, maybe not in the nicest spaces, the mailroom is super classy.
It almost feels
wrong to be doing stand-up comedy
there.
Yeah,
it's too
nice. So, you know, you guys should all hang out there, and there's no drink minimum. It's free admission, right? It's a free show. You'd be crazy not to go to that.
It's
as long as you went to the dog show first.
Got to go to the dog show first. Then on June 4th, it's guaranteed delivery at 110 Wall Street, downstairs in the mail room, which is in the lower level of the building. It's a gorgeous lounge. And I don't know for sure what we're going to have. We're going to have some stuff to give away before the show. So maybe get there for happy hour, which I believe starts at 6, but the show starts at 8. This show is sponsored by Swill. Go to getswill.com. It's an liquor store in your pocket. It is an app. Go to getswill.com and use coupon code DRINK5 for $5 off your first order.
They sponsor the podcast?
Whole place.
The whole place?
It's amazing. They're going to be at the Guaranteed Delivery Show, so we'll see what we'll get out of them. They're wonderful. What else we have? Check out weeklyhumorous.com. So go to weeklyhumorous.com, get on the email list. You'll find out about events and shows that we have going around. And what else happens? Do you have anything else?
I just want to go on record as saying that I regret my performance on this podcast. There's so many things I wanted to ask you. And I did. I was going to ask the whole thing. I was going to ask about, you know, jokes you're nervous about on your set. You take on a big responsibility. You're the gatekeeper, not just of modern humor as determined by the Writer magazine, but the site. Do you ever, because the internet is such an explosive place. Are you ever nervous? I wonder about that, because you're always on topical stuff and you're always making snap decisions.
I never even think about it. I just do it.
We're very different.
I just put it out.
I get so sweaty whenever I write anything topical.
I think... but there's you're always, you're, and I think I worried in the beginning and I tried to make everybody happy, and you can't do it. So you just you trust your gut. If you think it's funny, you put it out, and you hope for the best. And I think that's kind of how I look at it, and that's kind of how I do it. And if I'm wrong, I'm sure people will email and tell me that I'm wrong. But honestly, I don't get like hate mail or anything. People don't usually write, "Oh, we hate the content that you put on the site." Most people are supportive and like everything. So I feel like if they hate it, they just don't say anything, and if they like it, they tell me that they like it. So that's kind of where I am.
That's
you know?
A really uplifting message.
Yeah.
Like
well, thanks for listening. This has been Talkered. Please follow John online at John J. Zeller.
It's on the Twitter machine.
That's you on the Twitter machine. You can follow at Weekly Humorous is at Weekly Humorous and follow us on Instagram. And you can follow me at Marty Dundix. And please come to the Guaranteed Delivery Show. But more importantly, please go to the Good Dog Show on May 31st. It's a Thursday, 8 p.m. in Fort Greene.
That's right.
The link will be on the website. And this has been fun.
It has been, and again, listen, guys, if you somehow made it through this whole episode, I gotta tell you, listen to all the other Talk Words. This is the worst one. you can listen to all the other ones you've established. This is the floor.
This
it's
is not
all
the
better
floor.
Than this.
There has to be worse ones. The one where I forgot to record the entire show has to be worse than this.
Yeah, but then you see, you did it again.
Yeah.
You did it again.
We did do it again.
There has to be worse. Anyway.
Well, this is fun. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right.
I am sorry.
We'll have to see how many times we've said thank you to each other after this. I think we're up to 7, all right?
Thank you.
All right. Talkword is distributed by Humorist Media. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.